If self-image is so important to the Christian life today, why do so many people have a poor self-image? How do I know if I have one? What causes a poor self-image? I believe if we can find out what causes a poor self-image, then we can begin to eliminate it. We need to know what actually caused a poor self-image in our life today. Doctors have already said that by the time we're 2 years old, we've already developed a poor self-image. But we got to know why we have developed a poor self-image. I believe there are many reasons why, and in this particular teaching, we're going to share 15 probably reasons why, if we have adequate time, why we have a poor self-image. Let me just share quickly two reasons, two basic reasons, and many of them will stem from these two. Number one, the lack of stroking by parents. The word stroking is an all-inclusive word. It means to touch, to hold. It means to communicate, to talk, to listen, to understand. Oh, the cry of people's life today is this: if he only understood me, or if she just understood. Children are saying the same thing: Mom and Dad don't understand me. Parents are saying the kids don't understand. It's extremely important that all of us attempt to stroke one another. Have you always noticed that a cow, in stroking the calf, always strokes the calf upward? How many of you in this live audience ever saw a cow's tongue? You see, boy, a lot of farmers in this group here. Have you noticed that it's real rough? Well, it's for a lot of different reasons, but that roughness helps her as she strokes that little one after it's born. Y'all ever see a little baby calf? And how the mama just immediately starts stroking it? But always it's a stroke upward, always to lift the calf from where it's laying right there. And this is the way parents and husbands and wives should always do with one another. They should always be stroking each other upward. And do you know what? Regardless of our age today, now there might be some who would deny this, but we know it is a fact that every person in the world wants to be stroked. Have you seen the bumper sticker that says, "Have you hugged your kid today?" Let me ask you that question. Have you? If your child is nearby, would you just do that right now? Maybe you'd just put your arm around him. Hey, there's a nice way to go. Oh, that feels good, doesn't it? Hey, that looks real good. Why don't you stroke your mate or your friend close by? Why don't you just put an arm around them? Everybody's smiling at this time. Look back there. Look over there. Everybody. Hey, y'all getting out of control. Only just a minute. Boy, it feels good. It feels good to be touched, to be helped. A nurse said to us not long ago that a child cannot live without love. Children that are found somewhere in a backyard or a back alley and are taken and put in a foundling home will actually die the first year. Often, when they have plenty of food, plenty of clothing, and plenty of everything, but somebody to hold them. God designed the human body to be held. Isn't that something?
I sure am glad he did.
Aren't you, though? It's fun, isn't it? It really is neat. It's exciting, and it gets more enjoyable all the time. The human body must have somebody touching it. In the foundling home, there's not enough people often to hold them and to cuddle them and to touch them. And this is the reason it's so vitally important. And I just feel it's so important today that moms spend their time with children. I'm not going to fuss at you about if you work, if you have to work. Some have to. But a lot of people just work to be working because they don't know what to do with their time. God designed the mom to hold the little one, to hold them close, to stroke them, spend time. However, there are people, there are women who do work. who often spend more quality time. And that's where the emphasis is at. Quantity is irrelevant. It's quantity time. Kids need quantity time. They need somebody to... Quality. Thank you, baby. I'm getting the wrong word. It's nice to have you to help me. It's quality time that we need. Quantity is not the idea at all. Touching somebody, holding them, understanding them, listening to them, talking to them. Parents today are talking only 1 minute per child per day in a child's life. And yet, it's one of the greatest needs the child has, is for somebody to talk to them, somebody to stroke them. It's vitally important in our life. So the number one cause of the poor self-image is the fact that we have not stroked our children properly. Now, just in case somebody is here and you did stroke your child properly and the child didn't respond and the child didn't turn out like you want them to, let me just take a little pressure off of you. Also, it can be the response of that individual to stroking. If that individual feels unloved, unwanted, did you know that one negative input into a child's life by some careless, thoughtless person about a parent not wanting them can have an awful bearing on that child's feeling about themselves the rest of their life? Be careful. Be careful what you say about other children or about children. Don't allow negative input to come into their lives. Another reason for the poor self-image is, of course, the negative environment that we grow up in. Now, I'm going to talk a little more about that, but I just want to give you those two factors to begin with. As I've already said, doctors all agree that in 2 years from the time you're born, you already have a not okay feeling about you. And I could go into great detail and explain the reason, but I didn't know you're going to accept that fact as I did. And let me try to help you understand where most of us are at today. 5% or less of the population of the world are in this first category that I want to mention, first life position. This is the feeling of I'm okay and you're okay. Now, don't misunderstand this term. We're not talking about your relationship with God. We're talking about you're okay or not okay. We're talking about how you feel about you, your evaluation of who you are and whether you're all right or not all right. I'm not talking about a spiritual relationship with God at all. Less than 5% of the population of the world fall into this category of people who like themselves okay. I can tell you that every person in the world can develop and move into this particular area of life. And I trust that, and I know that we'll share with you more than enough information in this particular seminar to help you begin to move into that area and also to help those around you move into that particular category. The I'm okay, you're okay person is potentially a mentally healthy position. This person can solve their problems constructively. Their expectations are likely to be valid. They accept the significance of people. Let me summarize it by saying they feel life is worthwhile. See, when you don't feel like you're okay, life often is meaningless and is not worth living. Can you see how vitally important it is to have a healthy self-image? Because if you don't like yourself, there are going to be times when you're going to say, life's not worth it. It's too difficult. It's too complex. I don't care whether I live or not. But if you like yourself all right, that will begin to dissipate as time goes by. Number two, the second position, and this is where the majority of the population of the world is at. Number two, I'm not okay, you're okay. Would you analyze your own feelings about you? If I'm thinking what you're thinking, you're saying that she is okay, but I'm not okay. You view other people. You view the person at the bank. You view the person at the station. You view people in leadership as okay. But it's me, we say. I'm not okay. They're okay. And while you're saying that, they're saying exactly the same thing. I'm not okay, but you're okay. See, it is a matter of how we view ourselves. And I can assure you that it is God's will that you view yourself with an okay feeling. The third position is, I'm not okay, you're not okay. This is the position of those who lose interest in living, in extreme cases, commit suicide or homicide. They take the lives of others. I summarize that by saying they feel life isn't worth anything at all. We're getting close to where lots of people live when we talk about this particular area. The fourth category is the feeling of, I'm okay, you're not okay. This is the feeling of the person who feels victimized and persecuted. Therefore, he victimizes other people and persecutes other people. And it's from this fourth position that all of the criminals of our day come from. All of the thieves, all the criminals, all the murderers, all of the gangsters in our world today come from this fourth category. That is a fact. There are people who have developed, because they feel like they were victimized, they were neglected, developed a feeling of, I'm okay. These people are the gangsters. They pay people to stroke them. If the bad guy doesn't stroke him, he has him done away with and hires a new person to stroke him. This person hires his stroking done. Every person in the world wants to be stroked. What about the child? The boy speeds down the highway, takes off from a drive-in, spinning his tires, and you can be sure of one thing for sure, when you see a boy spinning his tires, normally he didn't buy the tires. Which has nothing to do with this seminar. But but he is wanting somebody to stroke him. And he is getting somebody to stroke him. Somebody looks. And that's what everybody is saying. Notice me. Hey, I'm here. I'm a people. I'm somebody. And when parents begin to recognize this today and begin to stroke them, actually when your boy or girl is acting up, say you have somebody over for dinner, and the boy or girl is acting up, acting like they don't normally act, you know what you should do? Say to the child, are you needing some stroking? Approach it head on. Well, yes, I really am. So you teach the child to ask for stroking rather than act up to get stroking. And it's not long until the child develops an attitude. And parents and husbands and wives, and we told you several months ago when we were here that we reserve the right to say to each other, hey, baby, I need some extra loving today. Would you hold me a little bit closer today? I hope y'all have agreed to do that. Days when you get up, you just have a little down day every once in a while. Everybody does. When you do, say to your mate, say to Mom and Dad, hey, Dad, I need a little extra stroking today. Hey, Mom, could you stroke me just a little extra today? See, when we begin to respond as adults in this area, then we get away from acting up or from doing things intentionally to attract attention to us. The child in school who is always asking unanswerable questions is reaching out for somebody to love me, stroke me, tell me I'm okay, notice me, I'm important. Every person in one way or the other reaches out or somebody to stroke. And we men have a little difficulty with that because I've heard Polly say in teaching a lot of times that Because when you're growing up, you just kind of grow up feeling like it. How is it you always say that?
Big boys just don't do that. They're told from the time they're little bitty boys that, you know, big boys don't cry. Big boys don't have to have that extra attention. And so when they get big, they cover that up and do not show that attention.
Right.
They're not men if they show their feelings.
Remember a man who came for counseling some time ago, about my age, you know, very young. And I was afraid of that. Well, I don't know about this group. And he said, and called his age, and I'd call mine, but y'all wouldn't believe it because I'm just a lot younger than you think. And he said, in over 26 years, I've never shed a tear until now. We asked him why. He said, well, I was told you not supposed to. So men often feel like they're not supposed to show their emotions, particularly the macho man today that fits that image of he's got it all together, therefore he doesn't show any kind of emotions. But let nobody kid you. Every person in the world wants to be touched in some way, wants to be held, wants to be noticed, wants to be appreciated, wants to be loved, and wants to be told that they're okay and that they're needed in the world today.
I feel like I need to share an example of what Perry's saying. We were teaching a seminar in Texas, and teaching this one, and the lady came after it was over and said, that's the reason why my husband always comes home every evening and tickles me. And she said, it just makes me furious. We said, well, have you told him that? And she said, yes, I have, but he does it anyway. Every afternoon when he came home from work, that was the very first thing he did. He began to tickle her. So we explained to her over again why he did this. He was wanting her attention. And even though he knew that it would make her mad by doing this, he would do it anyway to get her attention. And so the next afternoon when he came in, she said, let's sit down and talk. So they did. And she said, if you want my attention, I'll give it to you. But please don't tickle me anymore. And he didn't. But see, she kept her end of the bargain and began to give him the attention that he wanted when he came home. And the tickling stopped. This is exactly what happens. See, husbands and wives do the same thing. We do things to get attention, to have someone to say, hey, I love you, I notice you, I know you're here. And we may do it foolishly, like tickling. We may do it foolishly by pouting. A lot of things, we do it. Why? Because we want someone to notice us, to know that we're there, to give us the attention that we're craving at that time, because something in our life has happened that we need to be lifted. And so we'll go out of our way to do something to cause someone to notice us, good or bad, to give us the attention that we're asking for.
That's very true, darling. Thank you so much. And another cause of the poor self-image, as we mentioned earlier, is the negative society and the negative individuals that we're constantly dealing with today. Ask the average person how they're doing today, and they'll say, not too bad. Or have you asked somebody how they're doing, and they say, not too bad since this is Friday, or since this is payday, or since this is my last day on the job. That's what someone said a few days ago when I asked them. Well, not too bad since this is my last day on the job, or not too bad since this is the last day before I go on a vacation. A negative world that we live in today. How many of you have ever been to visit somebody on the job, and you get and the person leaves, or you get ready to leave, and somebody says to the man working, don't work too hard. Boy, What a negative environment we've built around. No wonder we produce next to the bottom in productivity in the world today. No wonder we got inflation problems. Today, we're telling people, hey, don't work too hard. And you know what the Lord recently showed me in prayer? That if everybody who has a job on Monday morning would go to work and do their job, did you know that we had resolved the inflation problem tomorrow? If everybody produced all they're capable of producing tomorrow, if they did their best to do a good job, we had resolved the problem. I was pleased to know about 6 months after I had made this statement and began to say it all over the country, state after state, and the president got on national television and said, hey, if everybody will go to work, we'll resolve the inflation problem in the world today. I asked one fellow not long ago how long he'd been working on that job. And he said, ever since they threatened to fire me. Can't believe it. I asked my friend how many people he had working for him. And he said, about half of them. And that's just about the way it goes today. You know, people brag about the fact that I've got a job and I don't have to do anything. No wonder our world is in the serious economic problem that we're in today. And if anybody ought to hear it, we Arkansans ought to be hearing it, because we're third from the top in unemployment in America today. Michigan first, Ohio second, and Arkansas third. And the tragedy of that is that we're in the Sun Belt. We're where it's all happening. We're where the climate is better and the air is pure and there's more beauty. And yet, somebody ain't producing at what we're capable of doing. And I don't know if we'll ever get the whole world told or not, but I can tell you that we're sharing everywhere we go the great need of people, employees, going back to work, doing what they're capable of doing, trying to eliminate a negative environment that we live in today. TV, extremely negative. The newspaper, extremely negative. Pornography, almost on every magazine rack in the stores. Extremely negative. You cannot see man at his all-time best without it having a serious effect on you. It's vitally important that we avoid it. I'm told today that movies are getting worse. And I know by watching some television occasionally that from some of the advertisements I see that they must be getting worse regularly. Years ago when, I'm about to tell you how old I was. But, you know, my dad used to tell me about the old-time movies and things like that. Johnny Mac Brown always played the good guy. And no matter how many outlaws he had to whip, the good finally won out. Roy Rogers always won out. He might have had to whip the whole community, but he always won out. Tom Mix had to whip the whole bunch, but good went out. Today, in some of the movies, I understand, those who are in complete error, who are perverse, may be the ones who are exalted or set free, while those who do right are punished. Our books often are projecting more negativism today. And even religion gets involved. How many people grew up in an environment where we heard more about the don'ts than we did the do's? Anybody here? You were told you couldn't do this, you couldn't do that, you don't do something else. But few times were we told what we could do. I believe if you're going to take something from an individual, you must give them something better in the other hand. If you want an individual to turn loose of the negative, you must give him something good in the positive for him to hold on to. And I believe this is the key to our youth today. I believe if we're going to take something away from them that is negative, let's give them something that will build their life, that will sustain them. In a recent survey, someone pointed out that 1/3 of America is on the move today. And moving from one location to another has and is one of the causes of the poor self-image. Years ago, when some of us grew up, we might have known one community, one city, one farm, one home, all of our life. I talked to somebody just a few days ago who said, I grew up. I was born in that house. That was home all my life. This has an awful lot to do with a healthy self-image. In fact, moving has done as much to tear down the self-image as about anything, particularly in children. You move from one school, one community to another, and when that child arrives at a new school, they feel like they have to compete. And so it's at that moment that we started playing games to be accepted. We want to be accepted. We don't want to be an outcast. We want to be on the in group. We want to be on the inside. We want to be accepted by our peers. And when we're not accepted, we feel bad, so we conform to be accepted. So we start playing games at that time in our life. And most of us, as I did, went through most of my life still playing games, trying to please people. Real tragedy, and the Word of God speaks over and over again about the individual who's always being a man pleaser. Often this is expected of pastors, to please people. I think it's extremely important, and I'm dedicated to trying to get along and to being to people what they want, as long as it's within the reasons of God's Word. But when it violates that, we have to do what God's Word says, regardless of how it affects. Sometimes the preaching may be a little bit hard, and the pastor may be often tempted, because he may see people rejecting it, say, you know, it's just not popular to preach like this. And the tendency is to want to go to the other side. In fact, the man who doesn't like himself will do that. Will please people, whether it's in the pulpit or whether it's on the playground. We tend to conform to other people if we do not like ourselves. I believe another cause of the poor self-image is the breakdown in the family unit. When a couple divorces, they sense a feeling of failure. And how many times have we dealt with that kind of a situation where somebody's divorced somebody else and they feel their total life is a failure because they couldn't make it in their particular marriage? And then the lack or inconsistency of discipline is another cause of the poor self-image. If parents break up, and I really suggest that even if there's fighting and quarreling, that children are better off in that environment than they are to be torn apart by a husband and a wife who are not willing to work it out. Because as long as they're still trying to work it out, they're learning that every time you don't get your way, you don't just take your red wagon and go home. You work out problems. You resolve problems. And few people today in the marriage department are willing to say, let's work it out. Most people are saying, let's throw in the towel. Let's forget it. Even many of the counselors of today are saying, you're incompatible, there's no way you can work it out, throw in the towel and forget it. An example of this, where parents are separated and they fail to discipline the child. Child discipline is difficult enough when husband and wife have their lives together. When husbands and wives are living in love and in harmony, disciplining the children is difficult enough. Take an example where a husband and wife separate. He moves one way, she moves in another direction. She may have custody of the children. The kids may be able to go and spend the weekend with him. Now, put yourself in this position. You may be in this position. Let me help you understand what's happening. The children go to be with dad 2 days in a week. The boy acts up. You think dad's going to spank him? No. He just here 2 days. I want to enjoy him. I want to have fun. And after all, I want him to know that I was the right parent. His mom was the one that goofed. And so he's not going to risk, if he doesn't love himself, he's not going to risk spanking the child. Then the child goes back home Monday through Friday to spend with mom. Mom's trying to provide a living, trying to discipline the children, and it's extremely difficult for her to compete with a dad on the weekend who would not spank. Now then, what does she do? If she spanks, the child may say, as many kids that we've talked to and parents we've talked to, I'll go live with dad. Recently, a parent came and said, what do I do, Perry? I said, the answer is very simple. Tell him to go live with dad, a doctor. And his wife recently came and said, our daughter says she's going to live with dad. It's like a holiday with him. I said, let her go live with dad. Give her your blessings, pay the bus ticket, and send her on her way. Well, you're 5 minutes ahead of me right now. She wasn't there 5 weeks, so she called her mom and said, Mom, I want to come home. This is not like I thought it was. That is exactly right. If you don't love you, see, you cannot afford to spank a child. One of the strongest manifestations I know anything about, and we're going to spend an entire hour tomorrow night talking about the manifestations of a poor self-image, how you can know if you've got one, is to not spank your child. You see, if you don't love you, you cannot risk the possibility of the loss of the love of a child. Now, if you feel okay about you, you'll be able to say, it doesn't really matter how you feel about it, son. You deserve the spanking, and you're going to get it. But the individual who doesn't love himself or herself cannot risk that. There's no way they'll risk that kind of a situation. Another reason for the poor self-image is our ability or our appearance or our intelligence has been ridiculed or questioned repeatedly by parents, teachers, friends, or anyone in authority. Think of that. When we've been told by an authority, regardless of who they are, parent, teacher, friend, when we've been told repeatedly things like you're clumsy, you're always dropping things. You ever heard that or said that? You never look nice. You're the roughest kid on the block. You wear out more shoes than anybody. How do you suppose the child's going to respond to that? I can tell you how they respond to it. Very, very poorly. It doesn't take many inputs like that. And an individual begins to see themselves as a dummy, as clumsy, as awkward, are slow to learn. I don't believe that a parent should ever praise the beauty or handsomeness of another child in the presence of your own child. You need to get that one down. If you say in front of your own child about another child, boy, isn't he good looking? If your child has a poor self-image, he is going to say, Dad thinks he is better looking than I am. And if he does have a poor self-image, it's going to be even more withdrawn. And he's going to feel like that you're setting as one of the character traits as handsomeness. And that individual realizes they cannot do one thing about it. It's unattainable. You can't get it. If you don't have it, you can't develop it. You cannot acquire it if you don't already have it. So a parent will never brag on the beauty of another child. What do you say then, parent? I don't want to just share the negative with you. I want to give you something. You brag about the things that you want to see develop in the child. You say, what beautiful manners. My, what a beautiful smile. Isn't he a generous little boy? Now, your boy, your girl hears that and says, I can do that. I can do something about that. I can become generous. I can smile. I can be kind. I can develop manners. And your boy or girl begins to reach out and begins to develop those attributes. So, you pose the kind of traits you want to see developed in your children's lives, and they'll begin to happen in their own lives. So talk about their smile, their pleasantness, their enjoyableness, the just enjoyment to be around them, and their friendliness, their warmth. Praise these things. That child can develop them. But as an authority, do not put others down. Polly, you want to talk about that particular area?
Read a story one time about a little boy by the name of Roger. Was in school, was in the choir, and the music teacher was having all the children to sing, and it came Roger's time to sing, and he didn't sound very well, and the teacher said, Roger, I'm going to put you on the back row because you're not a songbird, you're a sparrow. Can you imagine the effect that that authoritative voice had on Rogers? He quit the choir. It stayed in his mind that he was a sparrow, but sparrows couldn't sing. And until he became an adult, and someone heard him singing one day out by himself, like the story Perry told this morning of Victor. One day they found out that Rogers could sing, and he became a well-known singer. He did have a voice, but one person in authority told him that he couldn't sing, and so he quit trying for years. Now, it doesn't matter who that person in authority might be. See, it could be a parent. It can be a teacher. It can be someone that you admire or someone that you fear. Now, if you have a bad feeling about yourself, take a trip back into memory for a moment and see if somewhere you've heard someone say something negative about you that planted a negative thought. And from that time on, you have performed or have failed to perform according to that authority figure. I can remember when I was a young girl at the age of 16, I went to work at the Air Base during World War II after I'd finished high school. And I would go from, I worked at Post Engineers, and I would go from the office to the warehouse where I first began to work. And one day, I opened the door and started in, and I heard the older women talking. And they said, we always admire the way Polly walks. She always walks so straight. And do you know, until this day, that thought has stayed with me and controls the way I walk most of the time. Do you see what I'm saying? Someone said something good, and I tried to live up to it. There are also things in my mind that I can go back and recall that someone said that was not so good.
And do you know, even though I don't like it and I'm working on those areas, I've tried to live up to that also. We need to be careful, not only what we say, but what we allow to be said to us and to stick in our minds. It's very, very important that we reject those negative thoughts, words that are said to us.
Thank you, baby. I appreciate that so very much. You combine all of these thoughts we've been talking about with an individual's physical appearance. Say they are overweight, bad teeth, poor complexion, weak smile, bad eyesight, too tall, too short, different voice, low IQ, or learning difficulties, and then tack a nickname onto them. Oh, tiny, shorty, biggin, slim, littlin, red, pinky, dummy, frog, butchie, moose, bones. You know what happened? That individual feels exactly what somebody is calling him. He feels that. He senses that. And it will have a definite effect on the performance of that individual. It's extremely important that we call children by their names. And by the way, I think if they decide at some time in their life that they are not comfortable with the name they are being called, often they feel more comfortable with another name. I think parents ought to be big enough to change. Don't you? I don't see many people shaking their head. Must be close to where y'all are at.
Let me give them an example.
Okay.
Our youngest daughter's name is Betty Faye. Somewhere in school, in junior high school, her sister tacked the name Susie. She says today, "Mother, I don't know where Susie came from." We don't either, but that's what she wanted to be called. And still today, when she's married and has children of her own, she's still Susie. See, it's what they feel comfortable with. And sometimes it isn't easy for adults to change. We have a grandson now that's decided he's changing his name, and that's very difficult.
Really?
But we're working on it.
It's extremely important because we're going to live up to the feelings that we have about that particular name. When the child decides he or she is ugly or dumb and don't deserve the love of those around them, they generally live out the role to where they'll not have that love at all. The wise husband will never brag on the appearance of another woman in her presence. I see girls smiling. You never say while watching a TV or a movie, "Oh, it just drool." It's okay to drool, fellas, but don't let her know you're drooling. See, if you say, "What a beautiful woman," if she is being affected or plagued by a poor self-image, she's going to say, "He thinks she is more beautiful than I am." And this will push her that much lower down in her own self-worth. So he never commends the appearance of another woman in her presence. What do you say then? You say, "My, I like that perfume." Now, she can acquire the perfume. That she can do. Or you can, it'd be a good idea, you just go by that far. You can say, "My, what a fine meal she prepares." And then you'll start getting more home-cooked meals. See, you talk about the things they can do, they can attain, cannot do anything about. a long nose, or big ears, or a big mouth, or well, maybe a little bit. You see, it can't be done. So you talk about things you can attain, and also the wife in the same way. Our traditional literature to children, Polly, has had an awful lot to do with the self-image of children today.
I had never given this any thought until we began this study. And then I thought, boy, that makes a lot of sense. Let me give you the names of some of the traditional fairy stories that we read to small children. And after you've been hearing what we're saying, you evaluate this within your own thinking. Number one, one of the traditional fairy stories is The Ugly Duckling. What effect would that have on your child? Number two, Sleeping Beauty.
I wonder why they didn't call it Sleeping Ugly.
See? The beautiful one always wins, always ended up with Prince Charming. And see, if we didn't feel like we were beautiful or could ever beat that, then we didn't have a chance of having anyone that was really worthwhile, so we would have to settle for whatever came along. Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, Dumbo the Elephant, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. They're beautiful stories. I'm not saying the stories aren't beautiful, but do you see what they portray when you start looking at them in the light of what we're saying about what builds a good self-image or self-worth in a child, or what helps to destroy it and puts a dream outside of their reach? Cinderella. See, they always portray these characters as the most beautiful individual alive. Now, they can have a good effect if you view that correctly and say, the grace of this individual, why? The beauty, I can't. But the rest of her attributes, I can have. Now, if they'll do that, it will be great. But if, as most children, it has the wrong effect. They say, I can't be that. I can't do that. So we need to be careful what kind of literature and what kind of input we put into small children. It has an effect on the rest of their life. If you don't believe me, right now, who is your favorite fairy tale character? Don't answer out loud. Mentally, who is it? Let me tell you why you thought individual. That's the way you see you. Now think about that one tonight and tomorrow.
Has a lot to do with the way we feel about ourselves. Another cause of the poor self-image is the fact that we have the tendency to confuse failure in a project with a failure in life. And this contributes to a poor self-image. Did you know that everybody fails at something? But the tendency is to see yourself as a failure and say, I'm a failure. Because I failed one time, I'll never be able to be a winner. Let me just share some failures with you. Hank Aaron, biggest failure in baseball. Literally, this man literally struck out 1,330 times. But I'm not even sure you know that. But I am sure you know that he hit many, many home runs in his life. In fact, 740 home runs, which I suppose was about top, may have even topped Babe Ruth's record back then. Did you know that Babe Ruth struck out more than anybody in his time, but yet knocked more home runs? See, but we continually associate failures in a project with failures in life. I'm talking to somebody right now that's failed in business. And since you failed in business, you've been unable to generate enough energy, enough enthusiasm to put your name on the line to get in another business. You're saying to your wife, you're saying to your family, you're saying to your friends, you can't make it nowadays. There's no way to make it. You just can't do it. But down underneath, the real problem is you view yourself as a failure. It could all be altered because you're viewing yourself by past performance in one particular deal rather than seeing yourself as the winner that God made you to be. An untrained memory is another cause of a poor self-image. We see ourselves with an untrained memory. There are no bad memories and good memories. There's either a trained memory or an untrained memory. And all we have to do to train our memory is to begin to work at it in that particular area. But if you're constantly saying, I can't remember anything, I tell you, my memory's no good. You say that long enough, and I assure you that your memory will begin to fail you over and over again. Or if you begin to confess, I have a real good memory, I really do remember things, your memory will begin to change for the better. But if it'll be any consolation to you, let me say in passing that it is also better to be able to forget some things than it is to remember everything. Another cause of the poor self-image is the comparison of experiences with other people. We see somebody else accomplishing or doing something else, and then we compare our own experience with them. But the truth of it is that that individual put in your shoes probably could not do whatever you're doing today. But we tend to see other people in their performance as being successful, and we compare our knowledge with theirs. Compare yours with a mechanic. Maybe you don't know how to do mechanic work. You compare it with the individual who's capable of tuning up an automobile. And you say, my, what a smart guy. What a brain this fella's got. But put this fella in your place, and he probably could not perform at what you're performing at today. This is true in most every walk of life. We often think of education as being the amount of time we spent in a school of learning. That could, of course, determine a certain area or facet of our education, but not necessarily our education. You may have never gone to school a day in your life, or you may have gone to the eighth grade, or you may have gone to the sixth or the third or the tenth and stopped right there. And you may have struggled through the years with the very fact that you didn't get an education. And yet you may have abilities that many people at the college level cannot perform. You must see yourself as being able to perform and not compare yourself with the experiences of other people. Then we often compare our worst failures and our worst faults with another person's greatest abilities. I think of a 38-year-old scrub woman. She was on welfare. She was not too pretty to start out with. She began to read a book called that Claude Bristol wrote. The book was The Magic of Believing. She started believing, but she didn't start getting any prettier. But she didn't try to compete with the beauty queens of Hollywood. But she said, I'm going to try to think of what I used to do well. And she began to think of how when she was in high school, she made people laugh. And as she began to capitalize on this, that a few years ago, Phyllis Diller earned in 1 year $1 million. A scrub woman on welfare who was not too pretty when she was born, and then somebody scared her, I think. But she decided she'd use what she had, and she began to use it, and it's turned out pretty good. You know, Jimmy Durante was not exactly poster material. But he took what he had and he used it. He took what he had and he capitalized on it. And it turned out to be very profitable in his life. then we set standards that are often unattainable to us. And then when we fail in that particular area, we say, you know, I got to be perfect. There's no middle ground for people today. We either got to be perfect or the worst. Isn't it strange that this is the way we feel? We either got to be the best or we're the complete failure in an area. There seems to be no mediocre. There's no mid-ground. There's no midway for people today. And so if they fail in an area or feel that they're not highly successful in an area, they put themselves in the very lowest category that they possibly can. And then, of course, religion has been one of the great causes of a poor self-image. And in developing a poor self-image, Aristotle, 300 years before Christ, portrayed man as an arrogant, puffed up, egotistical, haughty, pushy, and boastful individual who was a Christian. This was Aristotle's view. And many of the sculptures we see today, much of the artwork that we see today, stems from what Aristotle thought about the God-fearing man. Aristotle projected him all through the years as a haughty, boastful, egotistical kind of an individual. Then we come to Christ's day, and then to Paul, and Paul's words, and then after Paul's words, the Latin translators take the word humilitas that Paul used, and they swung all the way from this side of the pendulum, where Aristotle was projecting the godly man as an egotistical, arrogant individual, all the way to the other side, and translated the word humilitas and projected to the Christian that the Christian was to be a nobody. And our generation has been plagued with that idea, and this is the reason we're in serious trouble in the Christian world today, because we have the feeling as Christians we're just nobody. How many times have you heard somebody say, yeah, I'm on my way to heaven, but I just ain't much. I just can't hardly do anything. I just guess it was not God's plan for my life. I just don't have any abilities. I'm going to finally get to heaven, but I just ain't much. That idea came from the Latin translators that the Christian was to be a nobody, all the way from Aristotle's idea of the egotistical individual who had it all together. There's a middle of the road. And the middle of the road is that God says to the church today, you're okay because I made you okay. Do you believe it? I believe it. I accept it. I thank the Lord for the knowledge today that God's people are okay.